When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey everyone, today's guest is Andrew Dost, pianist, vocalist, and multi-instrumentalist for the New York City pop rock band, Fun. Together, we dive in headfirst and dissect the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the smash hit single, We Are Young, taken from their 2012 album, Some Nights. Fun have the dubious honor of having the biggest song to date to be broke down and analyzed here on Krista Makes a Podcast. This song was massive. Andrew was so kind as to send some initial working demos of We Are Young that he shared with us here. To see the seeds of a song planted and come to life through demos is always so cool. I told Andrew that this track, to me, is like a grandiose 11-minute rock opera, somehow condensed down to 4 minutes and 10 seconds of amazing pop pleasure. This song is hook after hook. Producer Jeff Basker brought the song to life with the rest of the band, his enthusiasm and passion guiding the way throughout the whole process. And who knew the guys in Fun chowed down on Brussels sprouts in the studio to give them that extra bit of creative flow? I certainly didn't. For all this and a lot of fun, don't touch that dial.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard?
Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing really well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. We were joking before we started recording a little bit that I feel like I just saw you, and in fact, I did. less than Jake played St. Andrew's Hall in Detroit a couple weeks ago, and you graced me with your presence. It was a real pleasure to. I know we probably met in the past somewhere, on tour, Warped Tour somewhere, but actually, you know, shaking your hand and meeting you, I think, you know, that was my first memory of it. So awesome to meet you.
Yeah, it was so good. We had met in Europe on the bus because I'm friends with Vinny and friends with JR, mm-hmm. And so we had met a long, but it was brief. But that was my only other real encounter personally, other than years and years of listening to your music. And I don't know how much you like to get into your own work on this podcast, but I've got some questions and things, some agendas of my own here.
Well, I love that. And, you know, I you never know. People like to pop into shows and say hello. I know you came out to talk to JR, our sax player in Detroit the other night. But when I met you, I had just kind of innocently said to you, like, hey, man, great to, you know, see ya. You taking off? Are you going to be here after this? You're like, dude, I'm staying for the show. It's the Hello Rockview show. And that meant a lot to me. So thank you.
Oh, man, it's one of my favorite all-time records. And yeah, hearing History of a Boring Town, it was my first experience with Less Than Jake, and it just, it changed my life. It changed the trajectory of my life. It made me want to really get serious about playing music. So, I mean, thank you for that. It just is a monumental record to me.
That is that means the world to me. Thank you for the kind words. And your career, let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, this band Fun, I don't know. I'm sure people have said this to you. Like, would you call it a super group? What do you call it? It's just, to me, it was a couple friends coming together. Hmm. And the minute that I heard the band, I was like, wow. I mean, you really do have your own sound. The band, nothing sounds like it to me. And yeah, you can say, oh, the vocals sound like Queen. This sounds like, yeah. You can hear those influences. But man, what a unique band.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, I think it worked out really well. Just the things that we all bring to the table in terms of our skill sets and what we wanted the band to be and what we all listened to. And it just really, for lack of a better word, it was just a lot of fun. Like, it was, we really had a good time making music together.
Right. And this particular song, We Are Young, do you remember how it initially came together, the seeds? Because I know you sent me, you shared with us some really, really cool stuff, the opening tom beat, that demo that you had sent me. And then I heard some of the vocals from the, I think it was the second demo you sent, like the part, like tonight, like tonight, like the, you know, the vocal fluctuations, they were already there on that first demo. That was so cool.
Yeah, so Nate, like in the demo that you're referring to, is just kind of like mumbling the melody.
Yeah.
But before that was, we were messing around in the studio in upstate New York, and I really wanted to write a song kind of like, there was a Modest Mouse song. I can't remember the name of it, but it's on, you know, Good News for People Who Love Bad News. And I just had this kind of thought, like, it's time for us to make a song that's that good. And, like, I'm going to kind of do that. So you can hear that a little bit in the demo with the ba-ba-da, ba-ba-da, ba-ba-da. That plus being super inspired by My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye and that song Runaway. It pretty much is a ripoff of Runaway that I made and then sent to Nate. And then he came back to me and was like, okay, it's good. I've got an idea for how the melody is going to work, but it needs to really slow down into the chorus. The chorus can't be that fast. So it needs to really open up in the chorus. And then, so we started kind of playing with that. So if by the time the bar closes and then, so that like pre-chorus beat kind of takes a minute to get into the chorus. And then the chorus is a full on shutdown. So yeah, I mean, I guess I remember all of it pretty well. I remember the process pretty well because it was fun. It was fun for us to kind of like crack the puzzle of like the tempo map and the feel of how it ought to open up and all that stuff.
This song almost shouldn't work. You know, it is one of the strangest arrangements. Parts come in that never happen again. I kind of equate this song, I'll use the Queen example. It's like, you know, a Bohemian Rhapsody and it like, you know, some grandiose opus, like 10, 11 minutes that you were able to condense into a 4-minute pop song. It goes through these little different, almost operatic changes. When you get to that bridge part, it's like, what is happening now? And as you said, the tempo map, the tempo changes in the song, it's just really interesting. And then the coda at the end is just goosebumps for days. And all you want to do is rewind the track and hear it again.
Man, that is so kind of you. Yeah, I mean, we're huge Queen fans, which I think anybody that has heard our band probably can tell. And then also like Beach Boys, like you can hear that in some of the backing vocals. And in, like you mentioned, like things coming in just once or twice. Like that's one of my favorite things on like Pet Sounds, for example. You just hear like a ukulele hit once. And and it's just like, why? But I've always loved that. Like you don't need it more than once. Just give us a taste.
Well, I'm not the only one that thinks this is a unique and amazing song. I mean, this song is still moving. If you just the YouTube plays alone, the views are at over 1 billion. I can't comprehend 1 billion. The only time I ever saw 1 billion in my life is when McDonald's used to put on the sign how many hamburgers they sold. You can't comprehend a billion. Congratulations. And I still hear the song everywhere I go. It's in malls. It's just part of, you know, it got into to TV shows like Glee and different things. It just, it transcended anything I, and probably you ever thought we'd ever be able to do in a band, right?
Oh, for sure. It was just shocking to me. Like, I always kind of thought, like, I'll be like making like little weirdo indie songs, and that's cool. Like, I love that. I love like the people that listen to our music and the people that found our band. And then suddenly it was this leap into a world where it was just like very, very foreign to us.
Well, and this song, you know, it's not some down-tuned like modern sound. It is a modern sound, but the 50s progression in here, you know, it's the old 1-6-4-5, you know, that thing. Ed Sheeran harnesses that very well. He'll take old stuff and make it sound new. And this song has that. I can sing some of these 50s standards over this song, but you wouldn't hear it if you didn't sit down with a guitar and comb through it like it did. I'm like, wow. You know, the basis of this song is just old rock and roll, but all the elements and production that you guys did to it, it just, and the fact that it's 10 years old now, 11 years old, it still sounds as current today as anything on the radio.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think we can give our producer, Jeff Basker, a lot of credit for that. He introduced us to the Moog Voyager, which provides the low end, provides the basically what I consider to be like the heart of the song. It just, once that hits in the chorus, it just, you can feel it. And that beat, that big, you know, long snare, that was Jeff, you know, so he's really good. And throughout the album that we made with him, he was really good about finding different ways to kind of modernize and refresh the ideas we had and kind of make them more universal, more palatable, more unique. He's just a very, very skilled producer for sure.
I feel like all the pieces of the puzzle were there on this. I had read somewhere that he drove himself crazy mixing this song for like 2 weeks because he wanted it to be just right because, you know, it's such a grand song. But I feel like it was everybody here. You almost wonder, you know, what if you went with another great producer? Would it have come out like this?
Funny you mentioned that, because we had another producer come out while we were working in upstate New York writing in the sessions that spawned. We rented a studio and slept there. And out of that came Carry On, Some Nights, the beginnings of a few more songs. But we had a producer come out there. He even stayed with us. We made Brussels sprouts together. And, you know, we had like a little like retreat. And it was really fun. We really got along well. It was Dennis Herring, who we're huge fans of. He had just come off making the Waves record, King of the Beach, which I was obsessed with. Let the sun from my eyes, let it burn my back, let it burn through my thighs, up the wide, wide open. He had great ideas, especially with Carry On. We kind of made a demo that was relatively well fleshed out. And it just didn't work for one reason or another. We just couldn't kind of come to an agreement on whether it was money or schedule. I don't remember. But it didn't work with Dennis. And we kind of thought like, well, let's shoot for the moon here in terms of like, we love Drake. We love Kanye. We love, you know, just generally this like futurism that Jeff is bringing into the world. So like, let's try to work with Jeff. And I think he ended up liking the songs and it ended up working out.
Yeah, no, this track, Some Nights, that's another one. Just the vocals on that, that song's just absolutely beautiful. But, you know, this track, again, when you were putting it together, okay, and I ask this a lot in the show, you know, you're into the album, you got 7-8 songs cooking. Where did this one sit for you? What'd you think?
I think we knew relatively early on, it came about, maybe 6 or 7 songs in, and I think we were kind of like, that's the one, that'll do. But I kind of have felt that way about every song that I've ever done, and maybe that's ego and maybe that's misplaced, but I do think it's kind of like, well, I've also like thrown away a lot of stuff that I just didn't want to even finish. And so generally when I finish something or when we finish something as a band, we kind of thought like, cool, that one's good. And then with this one, the difference, I guess, was that when we played it for people, they were like, whoa, like, can I get a copy of that? Can you send me that demo? Can I hear, like, I want to hear more of that. And usually when I send people stuff, they're like, cool. That's good. You did, all right, cool. And then with this one,
good job.
Can I give me that, please? And so that was kind of our clue that it was like, oh, this is working pretty well.
That's really interesting. Well, you mentioned that Jeff, the producer, that he, making those blown out snare sounds, were those samples or did he create all those?
Well, this is a little trade secret that I don't know if anybody has publicly talked about. So it started as a sample. It started as a sample of Microphone Fiend by Eric B. and Rakim. And so if you listen to that, you can hear it towards the end. It's that. It is that snare. It is that kick. And it's huge. But they wanted to charge us to use it, of course, as samples. You know, that's how they work.
Sure.
And we didn't have any money, so we replaced it. We recreated it. So, I mean, it sounds pretty darn close, but it is a recreation of that initial idea of being a sample. But it's original.
That is so cool. So you heard something you loved, you're like, we're not going to pay a licensing fee, but we could emulate that. We can get it close. And I don't think you could have gotten any better.
Yeah. I mean, I wish we could have used the original just because how cool is that to sample Eric B. and Rakim? I mean, I love it. and we did that a couple times on the record where it was like, I wish we could use that, but we just can't afford it. So let's figure out how else to do it, which maybe provoked some, I don't know if innovation is the right word, but it made us work a little harder, which I think usually, you give yourself a boundary or a parameter and it makes you get creative within that. So I think it worked.
Right. And for everyone listening, you put out a record before Some Nights that it sold modestly, but you guys were still kind of trying to figure this whole thing out. So coming into this, you were just still writing songs and you were excited about them. You're writing these new songs or they're exciting or I don't think there's any ego there. And then what happens to your band when this song hits? It's just, it's incredible. I don't think anybody, I've talked to my friends that have had hits like this, which by the way, this is the biggest song we've ever had in the podcast in 3 years.
Oh, cool.
In terms of chart success and Grammys and whatnot. And we've had some pretty darn big songs on here. So congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, that's an honor. I love this podcast and I love the way you kind of really thoughtfully dig into stuff. And like, even in, as far as like from ear to ear, what's happening. And, I just think that's because I think about songwriting in the same way and production. And I just think like, why this word? Why this choice? Because there's an infinitely forking path of where you can take anything, as as a songwriter. And the way that these decisions get made to be this final thing is always so fascinating to me. So I love hearing you dissect these songs.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. Well, let's dissect. Let's get nerdy, all right?
All right.
The track's 4 minutes and 10 seconds. We Are Young. There's that four-bar tom drum intro before we get into verse one. And I know Chris is going to play that sample here pretty soon because you sent it to us and here it is.
That wasn't the sample that we ended up using on the recording. It was just some weird kind of happy accident that came out of that original demo that, Jeff recreated with samples from, I think that sample came from Plain Pat. And basically Jeff was like, this is how the song has to start. It has to start with the toms. And he was like, well, as soon as you hear those toms, you know what song it is. You're going to like, no, it's going to be this introduction to the song that in the club, at a show, you're going to hear that and you're going to know. And he was like, when people hear the toms, they're going to get up. And so he, jumped out of his chair. And Jeff did that a lot during the recording process. He would like get up and like, he would, pretend to flick a lighter or whatever. And Jeff was just always like, this is how people are going to react to this part, to this thing. And so that was kind of like, this is the first song we worked on with Jeff. And so that was my introduction to him, was his like very physical, visceral reactions to things and how he wanted things to hit the ear and to hit the audience. And it was just so cool to me to think like, oh, I've never really thought about that. I've only really thought about like what sounds cool to me and not really like how on the radio, if you flip to this, you hear, you know, it was just really cool to hear him break it down in that way.
Yeah. Some of these producers are like mad scientists. They get in there, you know, like, it's almost like they're poor man psychiatrists. I've said that before, and something's hitting this guy, but what a great energy in the studio to have the producer jumping up going, this is how it makes me feel. And it's going to make other people feel this way. And you're like, what's he talking about?
Yeah. To feel that contagious energy and to try to translate that to the track. It was just fantastic.
Give me a second, I need to get my story straight. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the Empire State. My lover, she is waiting for me just across the bar. My seat's been taken by some sunglasses asking about a scar. And I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget, but between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take it back.
Give me a second. I need to get my story straight. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the Empire State. My lover, she's waiting for me just across the bar. My seat's been taken by some sunglasses asking about a scar. And I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget, but between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take it back.
That's Nate's lyrics, and it's kind of classic Nate Roos to me in terms of, like, it's got a little bit of kind of wit. It's got a little bit of bite to it. Seat's been taken by some sunglasses. That to me is kind of a dig. And it's also a synecdoche, which I really always like. We get a lot of grief for the scar lyric about, is this song about domestic violence or something? And always have to say, no, it's, you know, it's metaphorical. It's an emotional thing. It's whatever. And yeah, generally, I just like to think of when you open a song, you're really setting the scene, and you're really
right.
You're really like giving people a world. And Pat Pattison says it's like a bag of dye that then drips down over the rest of the lyrics, which I always think is really cool. Like you just are shading every word that's going to come after it with this opening scene that you set. So, you know, we're in a bar, we're on the seats, there's an empty seat. It's putting you in a place, which I've always really appreciated.
I love it. I love the delivery. And it's so, like I said, this is like an 11-minute song that you guys somehow shrunk down and made a pop song out of, but this part never repeats. This delivery never repeats again. You don't even get it in the second verse. It's a different feel. And that's really interesting for a 4-minute pop song that is this popular. You know, this is like, this first verse to me is like an intro. It's setting up the story, the song. I remember the first time I heard it, I was hooked by the third line. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the Empire State. It's like, well, who can't relate to that? You know, how many bars you've been to that you've seen that or you've been a part of? And, you know, the sunglasses, the never even thought about a lyric like the scar, but as big as this song got, you know, that's going to be exponential people having their eyes on it and giving you that fan mail and that feedback.
Yeah. It was interesting to have to kind of consider after the fact, like, oh, I didn't really think that might go over that way. And like, is that harmful? Is that, you know, going to be a problem? Is that too intense? Is it triggering? I don't know. Because we were just kind of thinking, like, it's a good lyric. It works.
Well, there's a lot of information going on here. And again, I think it's about Nate's delivery with it that gets you in that headspace to want to listen to this. You know, there's times when someone's just barking lyrics, be it, you know, it could be all kinds of different music where, you know, there's keywords and things in there that aren't roping you in. And I feel that you get roped in here. Right off the top on verse one, the piano joins the drums here, playing single chords on bars 1, 3, 5, 7, and 8. And then halfway through, around I Know I Gave It to You Months Ago, that marching band snare comes in. The piano gets busier and playful there. So how this song builds is awesome. You know, those snares aren't really predominant there. They're there, but you're still feeling and hearing that tom part.
Yeah. I mean, it opens up little by little, I think. And I always like when a piano, you know, the chords start to break and arpeggiate, and it just makes things move a little differently. And then you get that rolling snare that makes things kind of move a little differently. And I guess I always think about this song in terms of the shutdown at the pre-chorus into the chorus, but now that you're mentioning it, it yeah. really does kind of unfold piece by piece in that way, and it grows a little bit throughout.
It does. And I'm assuming you played the piano on this whole track. Was that all you?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah. Do you recall, because what you do here is perfect, the piano, was it, you know, kind of off the cuff, you do a couple passes, or did you have something, are you the kind of guy that goes in, the idea's completely worked out?
It varies. This one was worked out, but in that original demo, it was totally different. It was, I wanted to do some like upbeats, like, and so I was even going to try to do that into the recording, and then Jeff was like, no, don't do that. And so, okay. So just breaking up the chords. And so, yeah, and it's a grand piano as well as a Nord, just the stock kind of piano sound on a Nord together, just to give it a little bit, kind of the warmth and richness of a grand, but also kind of the point and like plinky plunky sound that the Nord piano has, which I think you hear more in the chorus when it kind of, you get, it just thickens so much. But yeah, I just wanted to tell a story with each instrument, I think, too, in addition to the vocals.
Great. And something I did mention at the top, that tom part, the more I listen to it, it's almost rock, that part. And I'm going to say that's the first part of the song. We're going through different, you know, whatever you want to call them, chapters or segments of the song. But you get that drum intro. It almost reminds me of, I don't know if you ever heard the song Everybody Wants Some by Van Halen. It's off their third record.
Yeah.
And it starts with this tom thing. You know, so you get this rock thing, but then you go into this verse, the delivery's different, where the piano comes in, and now we're getting to a completely another passage in the song to me, which I'm calling the pre-chorus. I guess you would agree the next part is that?
I would. I don't know that it's a traditional pre-chorus in that, like, to bring it back to Van Halen, one of my all-time favorite pre-choruses in Dance the Night Away. Ooh, baby, baby.
Ooh, baby, baby.
Won't you?
Like that to me is a classic pre-chorus.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this is more of a emptying out or a clearing of the clear the mechanism kind of a thing. But yes, that I would call it the pre-chorus.
Take it back. So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.
So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home. And it breaks down to a single piano chords here and a vocal. It just kind of draws you in from what happened in the verse. You know, it's just down to the piano. It gets very personal there. And there's really no count. I tried counting it different ways to when the chorus hits you. And it's jarring, but it's perfect. Does that make sense?
It does.
It's jarring, but perfect.
it's the hey, smoke weed every day syndrome where you just like, you can't count it. You can try. You're never going to get it.
Hey, hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey. Smoke weed every day.
That's exactly it. And then you're in a completely different world. At 50 seconds, we hit chorus one.
You home tonight. We are young. So let's set the world on fire. We can burn brighter than the sun tonight. We are young. So
and then you got that. I believe you called it a Moog. I've always called it a Moog. Did you say Moog earlier?
I mix it up. I did say Moog.
Okay.
But I also say Moog. It depends on, you know, if you had said it first, I would have followed suit. You know, I don't really know what it is.
Oh, okay. Tomato, tomato.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to call it a Moog.
Okay,
but
cool.
Man, you can really hear that 50s progression here. You know, it's the Happy Days progression. It's the theme song for that show. These days are ours, happy and free.
Happy days.
These days are ours. Share them with me.
Goodbye, gray sky.
Which you guys have covered, right?
Yes, we have. It's the old Blue Moon, the old it's the 50s standards.
Mm-hmm.
But I hear that progression in here. I absolutely love it. Again, it's not some detuned, downtuned thing. Not saying that couldn't have worked for many million great songs, but just love that it sounds old, but it sounds fresh and new here. The drums get blown out. We were talking about that here, particularly the snare. Piano is playing a staccato part along with the low growl of the Moog synth running throughout. And is that an electric bass or synth bass?
There is an electric bass in addition to the Moog. So the Moog is laying these like long, low tones, which allowed Jack played the bass, and it let him be a little more percussive with the bass guitar to ding, ding, ding. You know, he could dig in a little bit. And we weren't as reliant on that supplying the low end. It could be a little more of the grit and of the like movement because the, you know, the bass is taken care of. So that was kind of a new idea to us. We're like, oh, we don't have to fill the bass out with the bass guitar. It's already there. The bass guitar can do something else.
That is so cool. I love the tone of the bass. The low end is perfect where it sits with the vocal. It's just, it's awesome. The lyric is, tonight we are young. So let's set the world on fire. We can burn brighter than the sun. And it repeats, tonight we are young. So let's set the world on fire. We can burn brighter than the sun. On the second time on Then the Sun, we get the first harmonies in the song. And Andrew, the vocals here sound maybe even tripled. They're definitely doubled. Do you recall?
I do. the main lead that's 8, actually.
Okay.
which again was a new technique to me. I think I had only ever doubled anything in the studio, which I always love, you know, from the time I like had a little 4-track recorder in my bedroom in high school, goofing around and thinking like, I think I thought that I had like invented that technique, and then hearing it with like, oh, everybody does that. Elliott Smith has been doing that for years. And so has everyone since the history of multi-track recording. But Jeff was like, more, you know, let's do more and more and more. And it ended up being 8 of Nate singing. The harmonies are multi-tracked as well, not to that degree, but there are 8 leads there.
Unreal. It's masterfully done because I can't hear that many. I thought like 3 maybe. The way that's layered and the way that it's mixed, it doesn't sound like it's overdone, but what a great sound, though. It's super, super full, and it distinguishes between the verses or the pre-chorus that happens before it, for sure. This whole part, it's just like another song that comes on. I think that's what I love about this track so much, is it feels like different songs at points that come together. A lot of times when you do a mishmash like that, it doesn't work out. In this case, it's great. Chorus 1 here, they're all double choruses. Was there any talk of like saving it? Like, let's only do a half chorus the first time.
We may have played around with that a little bit, but I think it just never felt right. It just was always like, that's too short. We need to do that again.
Yeah, because you're in, again, it's a completely different world. It's almost like you got to stay in that world for a little bit more than one time through. Again, the last line, then the sun, we get the first harmonies there. Do you remember if there was any talk of harmonies anywhere else? Because there certainly could have been here.
I think that's, again, Jeff, with his kind of infinite wisdom, knowing like, when is it time to do more and when is it time to stop yourself from doing more? And that was a big lesson for me from our first album, Aim and Ignite, into Some Nights, was like, if you go back and listen to Aim and Ignite, there's like a lot going on. There's very kind of colorful arrangements that are probably a little too ostentatious at times. And with Some Nights, we wanted to pare that back a little bit to kind of the essentials. What is a song? Let's just stay for the most part in a groove. Although we're talking about how We Are Young doesn't do that. But in general, let's not just saturate everything every second. And so when those harmonies come in, sun, it feels a bit like clouds are breaking and the sun is shining through, or that was kind of the hope anyway. So that just open things up a bit before you close it again and go into the second verse.
This is it, boys. This is what are we waiting for? Why don't we break
the... Hey, everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Andrew Dost coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Hey, it's Chris DeMakes, a podcast producer, Chris Fafalius. Will you do me a favor real quick? Go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe to One Hit Thunder. It's the show that I host with my good buddy Matt Kelly, where we have guests from the world of music and comedy and art, and together we dive deep into a band or artist that people consider a one-hit wonder and decide if they brought the thunder or were just a blunder. You'll laugh, you'll learn, maybe you'll get mad at us. Who knows? We have an enormous back catalog that includes episodes about Eagle Eye Cherry, Stacey Q, Looking Glass, The Weather Girls, Tag Team, Four Non-Blondes, Martika, Krayshawn, Sixpence None the Richer. I could go on and on, but how about you just subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods and experience the fun for yourself. And now, back to the show.
Who all sang on the track?
Me and Jeff did the harmonies, in addition to, of course, Nate on leads. I don't believe Jack sang. And then, of course, Janelle Monáe doing the bridge, which I'm sure we'll get to in a second here.
Right, absolutely. So, yeah, I was wondering who all did the vocals. Obviously, I knew Nate did his thing. But we get into verse two, and right at the start of it, there's this huge breath inhale. And for those listening, you know, a lot of times I'll hear my breath in songs and I'll go in and chop it out. And you can do that sometimes and get away with it. But a lot of times you want to hear those breaths and those emotions. One of the first people I could think was Michael Jackson. You know, his whole thing, how he breathed, they left all those in because, I don't know, it just felt like you were closer to the singer. It just gave it that personal feeling. But starts off with a huge breath inhale here.
No, I know that I'm not all that you got. I guess that I just thought maybe we could find new ways to fall apart. But our friends are back, so let's raise a tail. Cause I found someone to carry me home.
Now I know that I'm not all that you got. I guess that I just thought maybe we could find new ways to fall apart. But our friends are back up, so let's raise a cup, because I found someone to carry me home. Double unison vocals, at least on this verse, that carries over here. Do you recall how many were here?
Probably just two or three. Because you're talking about the, because I found someone to carry me home, like that part that kind of feels a little more exposed?
Well, yeah, there's other lines within here, and I'll tell you something else. These, I always talk about them, the hooks within songs. Mm. The little hiccup, the little falsetto hook on the word just thought on that line.
Yeah, skips up a little bit. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think a testament to Nate's skill as a lead singer, how he just knows when to pick those little moments to give it a little something extra. I always like that part.
I'll hear pop singers do that, like Taylor Swift, and it's almost like so sugar and saccharine cutesy, but like you can't imagine the song without it. It's just those little nuances that just kind of give it, you know. And I've done that before. I've had accidents with my voice where I'm like, we got to redo that. The producer's like, that was cool.
Yeah, it gives it a unique thing. And I've always loved the Cranberries and like Dolores O'Riordan's skip that her voice kind of did at the end of things.
Yeah,
it's so cool. But yeah, the second verse, I always think of the second verse as being like a rule-breaking verse. Like you establish the rules in the first verse, you give the kind of foundations of what, you know, the parameters are, the rule book of the song, and then in the second verse, you either subvert that or you reinforce it generally. And so one of the songs that I think does this really beautifully is All My Best Friends Are Metalheads. How there's a guitar line that comes in, but and from the first time I heard that, I was like, it blew my mind in terms of what the second verse can do.
Don't you think it's strange that there's a way with how you look and how you act and how you think? Pretend they're not the same as you. And do you know about it?
So in a lot of our songs, I always try to do that All the Pretty Girls off the first album introduces a second set of, you know, vocals that come in and they act as a counter melody.
I call you out, baby, just to feel a little bit better about myself.
He does.
I do.
You do,
baby. I do.
Baby,
I do.
Get it,
I do. Until their lips start to move and the friends talk music, I say I never heard the tune.
Yeah, second verse, break the rules.
Well, for sure. And, you know, I talked about there's a couple vocals here, it sounds like. One vocal almost sounds way, way pushed back, like it's an octave up, almost like a falsetto. Do you recall that happening there? I'm hearing that like buried deep.
I think that is happening. I believe that maybe Nate doubled and then sang it staccato. Probably that. We also messed around with pitch a lot during the recordings. A lot of octaves down, a lot of octaves up, a lot of vocoder. But I don't believe we pitch shifted that. I think that's actually just Nate singing in falsetto and then, you know, low in the mix.
Along with that, we hear the drums, bass, and I'm hearing that Moog. They're all in here. Halfway through, maybe we could find new ways to fall apart. Panned off left, there's like this dun 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 dun. It's like a same note keyboard thing that happens.
I just thought maybe we could find new ways to fall apart.
I know there's some French horns there doing something like that. Yes. Bump, 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 bump. I'm doing that also on the piano. Yes. Okay.
Again, and it sounds like, I don't know, it's almost like, where'd the marching band come from? But it's so subtle. It's not like in your face, like, you know, a band with horns like my band or Chicago or something. It's there, but it's just the way this song was textured. And I keep harking back to what I read about Jeff, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I mentioned earlier that he slaved over this mix. He just couldn't stop, you know, obsessing about it. And I can see why, because of the way everything's layered here. It's just done beautifully.
Yeah, he worked very hard on that. Listen to it in his, you know, in his car, take it back, tweak something, go back to the car, go back to the big speakers in the studio, the NS10s in the studio, just all different formats, all different situations, all different spaces. He went very deep on it for sure. And I'm a sucker for horns. I grew up playing trumpet. And so we use them, you know, Fun used them maybe a little, not excessively, but like, I thought that was kind of a secret weapon that we had, was the ability to add a little texture in this kind of way.
Well, out of verse two, we go into chorus two, another double chorus, same lyrics again. We get that harmony at the end with Then the Sun. The Moog synth is a bit louder here. It sounds like it's louder in the mix and also changes some notes. It's more playful here. We also get those marching band snare pick-me-ups here mixed in with the drum track. It's subtle, but it's killer.
Man, your ears are wild. The way you pick up all this stuff is crazy to me.
Well, I'm going to tell you, to be fair, you guys stump me in the next part, okay?
Oh, good.
I'm going to give the cliffs I'm going to give the cliffs notes to the listeners on the bridge, cuz this thing is just out of this world. It's next level.
There's a lot going on there. In that chorus, the Moog does get a little more playful because again, you can kind of break the rules that you've established in the first chorus. You can have a little more fun. And I don't believe there's any copying and pasting. We maybe did some of the vocals in the chorus, or I don't think the vocals are just flown in from chorus to chorus. I think Nate just did all of those again. I'm pretty sure.
I listened for that. I mean, this would be the perfect type of song to copy and paste, you know, choruses at least, but
sure.
I couldn't hear it. If they are there, I couldn't pick them out. It sounds like they're different performances, which I appreciate. I think there's something natural. I think people can feel that.
I think so. I think you can really homogenize a song very quickly when you're just like, oh, here's that literally again. It adds a little life, even if somebody doesn't know it's necessarily happening. It just gives a slightly different, you know, feel and bit of life. And again, I think that's a testament to like Nate's skill as a singer, that he can match his own voice so precisely. And then Jeff to know that like, okay, we need to create a very distinct world here from second to second, and not take any real shortcuts.
Yeah. Out of chorus two, we go right into this bridge. Home tonight. And after each line, there's na 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 that happens. I'm not going to read all of those, but carry me home tonight with the na na na's. Just carry me home tonight. Carry me home tonight. Just carry me home tonight. The moon is on my side. I have no reason to run. So will someone come and carry me home tonight? The angels never arrived, but I can hear the choir. So will someone come and carry me home?
We worked hard on those lyrics. We couldn't really, there were a couple lines, like the angels line came later. And in general, the radio edit was quite a bit shorter than that. But on the full version, we really like kind of wanted to stretch out a little bit and really make it, yeah, I guess kind of an epic and to, you know, bring in these themes of, yeah, I guess like the afterlife or whatever it is. You know, we wanted it to feel big and grand and also personal, I guess. But to almost, yeah, see the clouds parting, see the angels, hear the choir, all that stuff. We wanted it to feel very large and very kind of timeless or almost, I don't know, I guess I always think of things in terms of like a cathedral or something. Like, what would this sound like in a cathedral? And that part was kind of inspired by that sort of feel.
Yeah, there's something, I don't know what the word is. There is something uplifting and spiritual, churchy about this part. But I feel like the lyric is almost like a call for help, which is so, that's what I love so much about music, is like, there's this call for help. You got this spiritual thing happening here, but it's a pop song. There's all these, like different things here. I called it the kitchen sink part of the song. It's the busiest part here. There's just everything that you could possibly imagine. It's the biggest part of the song. We get those na-nas panned off right and left. On the right, that sounds like Janelle Monáe. Is that correct? Would she be over on the right?
I can't remember where we put her lead. I don't think she did any of the backing vocals. I believe she only did the carry me home tonight. I think that was all she did. But I remember playing a lot with the panning of the na-nas. And then at one point I did these like, ooh, wee. Things which I was as immediately after I did those, I was like, we have to lose those, that is not working. But everybody was like, no, it's working, like, let's leave it in. And so like, there it is.
I'm so glad you said that, because I'm trying to figure out how this part worked. Okay, you got the na-na-nas, to me, they're pan right. You got some more na-na-nas pan left. You got the lead vocal that's coming in and out. There's harmonies happening. But then, again, there's so much going on. Usually I'd be able to break it down line by line of what happens. I can't distinguish. And when you start doing that woo-woo part, which I hear predominantly pan left, it shouldn't work, but it does. So that's what you're saying. You go, this doesn't work with everything because there's too much here. And then your bandmates are going, no, it's genius, which it is. It's awesome.
Well, that's maybe, that's very kind. I think it's just one of those things where when you're writing a song, and anybody who has written a song, I think, knows this, like when you have an idea, of how things are going to fit in your head. And then when you do it out loud, it maybe works and it maybe doesn't. And sometimes, like, for me, it's like, oh, wait, that melody actually overlaps with itself in a way that fights and doesn't work. Or sometimes it's really cool. But generally, for me, I'm like, I have to hear it in the room to know if it's a good idea or not. Because in my head, it might just not, you know, might not connect in the world. And that was one where I thought it didn't connect. But fortunately, everybody else, you know, I guess thought it did.
No, I was trying again to you know, dissert where everything was in this. And it was, there's just so much going on. I did my best. Talked about the na-nas a second ago. There's that woo-woo thing you're talking about that's happening here too. And there's a less busy marching band snare here, which by slowing it down and not having it be as busy, I think it makes this part sound heavier.
Mm.
You know, it's not as urgent in moving because there's so much happening here. I think if that snare was still going fast, it's kind of pulled back. It's different from the other snares in the song. And then at the last line here, it just builds to this amazing crescendo to go back down into the chorus, which, again, that part on paper looks like it shouldn't work.
Sure, yeah. And part of that, too, what's happening there is Jeff was playing a Juno synthesizer and messing with like the cutoff to, and then that, so that kind of helps, like gives it this like extra lift, and you can't even really hear it, but you can feel it, which kind of has become a part of the way I produce songs and write songs now, is like, I don't care what I can hear. All I care is what I can feel. And so that was a perfect example of that learning process of like, that has to be there. It gives us this body and this foundation and this like transitional beat that we're gonna not really notice, but it'll help.
Gotcha. Well, chorus three comes right out of that bridge. It's, I hate using the word jarring. It almost sounds like I'm knocking the song, but it just, it doesn't sound like it should work. It does though. It comes right back down. Chorus three. We get the same lyrics again. And what else could you have said here? And that's my next question. Was there ever any other lyrics or, hey, it's the third chorus, we got to rally here and put an extra line in or change things up?
No. You know, it was always just like, this is, we're going to make a pop song. We're going to go for it. We're going to throw in everything but the kitchen sink, like you said, and we're going to repeat that chorus again. But it's funny. One thing that I did want to mention about the chorus is that it started a little bit as a sort of cynical lyric, and it kind of became like a party lyric, a youth lyric, but it started a bit as like, we're burning through fossil fuels, we're just destroying the planet, screw it, let's set the world on fire, we might as well, because tonight we're young, so let's, you know, whatever, we'll just burn brighter and kind of burn ourselves out as a human race. And so it ended up being like not the tack we took as we were kind of finishing it and interpreting it. But that was kind of where the lyric started.
Oh, man. Thank you for sharing that. That's so cool, because I've heard that before with songs. They start out as something. And, you know, thank goodness for it that you had that initial idea, because it wouldn't have maybe spawned what it ended up being.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like we liked it better. I think, you know, we've all written enough kind of cynical songs in our lives that like it felt kind of good to just be like, yeah, we're young. We're vibrant. We're youthful. I'm hip. I'm edgy. But
yeah, by 2012, I would have had a hard time singing that song.
Sure,
youthful,
sure.
And edgy. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, when we were not hip or edgy at the time. We were firmly in our 30s and very tired at all times.
Not looking any worse for the wear yet. Well,
right.
Chorus three here, it breaks down on chorus three. We lose the growly Moog. It's very spacious and atmospheric here. I can hear those delays and those reverbs. I love the first half of this. We can burn brighter than the sun. The organ swells into the second half of chorus three, just comes right up. The Moog is back in, as is the staccato piano. And we get that wonderful harmony on Then the Sun, the last line, before we get into the next part, which, you know, we had talked about, you know, were there any other lyrics for the chorus or any other information? You don't need it because you get it in the, what I'm calling the coda at the end of this song.
Sure.
And man, what a way to tie up a song. It's just like goosebump central when I listen to this part. It is so good.
So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.
So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight. There's just 8 piano chords and an in-your-face personal vocal. It's so awesome. It's such a great way to end a song.
Yeah, I like that a lot about it. We go so big with all of the sounds, every instrument at our disposal, essentially, and then shut it right down for the end. Make it more personal. I think something, I don't know if this was an intentional thought as we were doing it or not, but I always feel like through all the different shows that I've played in all these different bands and as much chatter as there's been in the crowd and people aren't paying attention or whatever, kind of the quieter you get, the more you can draw people in rather than trying to like overpower them and blast them out. Like sometimes that's what draws you a little bit more. So I always like that about the end, how it kind of like forces you to kind of like lean in a little bit.
Crazy hypothetical question I've never asked anybody in over 3 years of this show. Does the song become the massive hit it is if the coda is not there?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think about this with every part of my life, actually, every facet. Like, what happens if, like, you know, I was in a car accident? Like, what happens if, like, an inch to the left and, you know, whatever? I don't know. I think the coda is important. I think you need a little bit more, not that it's like the most unique thing or anything, but I do think that it's just those little flavors that add so much to the dish that where you're just like, yeah, it just helps. Just gives us a little taste of something.
Just my opinion. I mean, the chorus is just too undeniable, but man, that coda, what an awesome way to end the song. And before we break, first of all, thank you for your time. You know, it's one of those things you guys aren't, I guess Fun's not active currently. So, you know, a lot of guys don't want to get on here and talk about a song maybe with the band's not active. I really appreciate you talking about this one. It's such a special song.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. I mean, my pleasure. I love music so much and I think about it all the time. And I was teaching songwriting.
I can tell.
And yeah, well, yeah, I mean, and vice versa. Like, I can tell that you like deeply dig into this stuff. And that shows in your writing as well that like, you know what you're doing, you know? And so to get to talk about this stuff and kind of nerd out is really a lot of fun.
That's great. Well, before we break, what do you got coming up? Solo stuff. I know you got a new record in the can. Let's rap about it.
Yeah. So I started a new project called Metal Bubble Trio, and I have an album done called Cucumber that I just got the masters finalized, all the files that I don't even know what to do with them yet. I just have them now. Cucumber is finished. I'm going to release it soon. I'm going over today with my friend Tommy to work on some artwork for it. And I'm just very excited. It's taken me a long time to get back into writing songs that I feel really safe sharing. And it feels good to have kind of a body of work that's ready to rip.
If you can give the listeners a one or two sentence pitch on the sound of this project.
The intent was to make a bossa nova album. I got really into bossa nova.
Wow.
A bossa nova album that what would it sound like if Frank Ocean and Gorillaz were back in time making a bossa nova album with like, you know, Jobim and Stan Getz and, you know, Gilberto or whatever. Like what would Gorillaz, Frank Ocean and traditional bossa nova sound like? So that was kind of what spawned some of the curiosity there.
That is awesome. Well, hey, where can people find you online?
At Andrew Dost on Instagram, at Metal Bubble Trio on Instagram. And that's it. That's about it. My website's down. I can't figure out websites for the life of me.
Yeah, your website's Instagram now. Perfect.
Right, exactly. Yeah. By the time this airs, it'll be up though. AndrewDoss.com, MetalBubbleTrio.com.
Right on, Andrew. Thank you so much, bud.
Yeah, thank you, man. Really a pleasure.
Start to begin and then stop at the end. Just let go. All up and then blame someone else.
The song you're hearing is Universal Themes from Metal Bubble Trio's soon-to-be-released album Cucumber. In preparation for this episode, Andrew sent me Cucumber, and it's so good. And you know how you can tell it's so good? Cucumbers are my least favorite food, and I've still listened to the album called Cucumber every single day since he sent it. Go follow Metal Bubble Trio on Instagram, and don't go anywhere. There's lots more Krista Makes a Podcast coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Krista Makes a Podcast producer, Chris Fafali, is here. Do you enjoy music documentaries? I think I've watched every VH1 Behind the Music ever. Whether I was super familiar with the artist or not, I was always fascinated with the story. Well, that's what inspired me and my friends to create the Docu-Podcast. I think I just invented that term. A band called Punchline, which, yeah, it's the story of the band that I've been in for like 70% of my life now. But we approach the story in a way that's relatable to anyone who's played in a band, or loved music, or experienced heartbreak, or struggled, or has just been on a Forrest Gump-like journey through life. I'm really proud of this pod, so if you're a Krista Makes a Podcast or a One Hit Thunder fan, I think you'll love it. You can subscribe to A Band Called Punchline for free wherever you get your podcasts. Check it out. It would mean the world to me, and I think you'll love it.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only, and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Humble Kings from the Pacific Northwest, a punk rock duo featuring Adrian Sandoya and Kevin Mackey. If you like super fast melodic punk rock with catchy harmonies, this is for you. Here's a snippet of their song, Zero Sum Game.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
Chris, you know I was excited about this episode. I'm a big Andrew Dost guy. Love fun. Love everything this guy puts out. And on top of it, he's a super nice guy. And on top of that, as you brought up, this is the biggest song that we've ever had or ever broken down on the podcast. You brought up the YouTube plays, which... a billion. A billion is an insane number. That is, Chris, a billion is 1,000 million. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. This song won the Grammy for Song of the Year in 2013. And on top of that, like, it spent 6 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100. I mean, it's seriously... one of the biggest songs like ever, kind of.
It is, and I absolutely love it. I don't hate it. You know, a lot of times songs get so big that you're just like, ah, it's annoying, I don't want to hear it, or, you know, that's just kind of human nature. Not this track. I even told Andrew off recording, we rapped a little bit at the end of just, you know, how special this song is. You know, musicians are our whole lives. I mean, most of us, like, we could never imagine having a song that big, and not many people get to have a song that big, and he did. It's, you know, I think there's something to be said too. I didn't really mention it in the episode, Chris, that, you know, these were just three friends that came together. They put the first record out. There was really no pressure to do a follow-up because the first record didn't go through the roof. So they were just writing another batch of songs. And, you know, can't be stated enough what Jeff Basker, the producer, brought to the table.
Yeah, I think that was a big move on their part to work with Jeff. I mean, some of the other songs that Jeff has produced, for example, Chris, Locked Out of Heaven by Bruno Mars, incredible song. He co-produced Uptown Funk with Mark Ronson. He co-produced Find Your Love and Show Me a Good Time by Drake from Thank Me Later album. Like, the dude has produced massive songs, worked on a lot of hip hop. And I think the elements of those sorts of production lent themselves so magically to this song and this album, you know?
Absolutely. There's nothing to me. Yeah, you can pick out little things. Yeah, some Beach Boys and Queen or whatever. But these guys are their own animal, Chris. There's nothing that really sounds like Fun. I remember when I first heard it. And of course, my ties to it were through Fueled by Ramen. You know, as everyone knows, or most people know, I have a big history. And so does Less Than Jake with Fueled by Ramen. And a lot of my friends that were working there at the time are like, you got to hear this new Fun record. This thing's incredible. Adam was one of them. Adam Similja. Yeah. If you're listening, Adam, hello. He was just like, you got to hear this. Melissa over there, she was just like, this is next level. And they were right.
Yeah, they were. Hey, another interesting thing about, you know, something that Jeff said, I love stories about producers who are very enthusiastic. I've worked with producers who are very enthusiastic before, and it just makes you more excited about the whole process. But he brought up about how as soon as you hear the toms, you're going to know what song it is. And it made me think of, like, when you hear the fill at the beginning of Smells Like Teen Spirit, you instantly know what that song right. is, you know? Well, you know what it is from the guitar or whatever, too. But when you're talking about drums, I just, that's so cool to be thinking about that. I never really think about that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's a billion different things you could be thinking about when you're writing a song. But thinking about, from the listener's perspective, that they're going to recognize this the second they hear it.
Yeah. And what a crazy arrangement. Again, that tom, that drum intro that we hear, that goes into the verse, which goes into what we were calling that pre-chorus. Completely different parts. Then the chorus hits, completely different part. And that's really hard in a pop song. Again, I look at this song as like an 11-minute song that they somehow shrunk a rock opera down into 4 minutes, but did it just perfectly.
It's impressive, man. Hey, oh, real quick, Chris, by the way, it is Moog. It's not Moog. It's Moog. I went on their website and they said it's Moog that rhymes with Vogue.
I've never heard anybody say Moog. And now I feel like kind of an idiot for correcting Andrew because I'm the chief idiot here. It's Moog. Who knew?
You're not an idiot. I've called it Moog forever, too. I think most people have, actually. some more things about this that I thought were really cool. Hey, man, I got to tell you, Andrew is a real deal, as you may have known when you're talking to him, a real deal, huge Less Than Jake fan. Like that night, you and him called me from the bathroom at the Detroit show, like on FaceTime, and like answered. And I'm like, who is that guy? He's like, hey, Chris, Andrew Dost. I'm like, oh, what's up, man? And anyway, real deal Less Than Jake fan. And I loved that he cited Metalheads as an example where when he was talking about how you kind of establish the rules in the first verse, but the second verse is a chance to break those rules.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool that he cited Metalheads there.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, and I'm sure it came across, but you know, to everybody listening, but what a nice guy. So humble. And he's a music nerd. He's like me. He loves diving into this kind of stuff. And I'll tell you something. One of the most un-rock and roll things I've ever heard is when he said they were hanging out eating Brussels sprouts. I've never heard a band say that. I like Brussels sprouts, but I thought that was odd.
Brussels sprouts are rock and roll now. You didn't know that? I've been rocking Brussels sprouts for a couple of years. They've moved to the top of my list of one of my favorite foods, man. They've been really, people have been making them really rock and roll lately.
Andrew is so sweet. He said it just off the cuff like it's a normal thing. Yeah, we're in the studio hanging out having some Brussels sprouts. It's like,
I want to have some Brussels sprouts with Andrew Dost at some point. Hey, Chris, also the kitchen sink bridge. The one thing I was thinking about is like they threw the kitchen sink in so hard that they're like, let's throw in Janelle Monáe too. What the hell? Let's go as crazy as possible. Chris, you asked him does the song become a massive hit even without the coda? And I thought really hard about that. And you know what I think? I do think it's an important part of the song. I do think it wraps it up perfectly and gives it a real emotional sort of ending. But I still think it's a hit without it. I think that chorus is too undeniable.
That's my feeling, and I said it, and I stand by it. Yeah, I think I still think it's a hit, but man, that coda is absolutely beautiful. Something else that's beautiful. You want to hear more of Chris and Chris? You can come join. Hey, listen, this is basically our Patreon. It's called Supporting Cast. It's the same thing as Patreon. It's our VIP program. You can go to chrisdemakes.com, and for the price of a cup of coffee or two a month, you can get bonus episodes of The After Party with Chris and I. And yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, beautiful VIP program. We put out gorgeous bonus episodes every week, and you get a luxurious back catalog of these beautiful episodes the second you sign up for the cost of a, what do we like to say? For a cost of a apple juice at the Cracker Barrel.
Apple juice at the Cracker Barrel, yep. About $3.79. You can hear Chris and I yap at you some more. So yeah, get over to chrisdemakes.com and give Chris a follow on Instagram. Yeah. He loves feeling the love. Chris Fafalius on Instagram, and you can find me at less than Chris D. I'm still doing those custom songs, chrisdemakes@gmail.com. If you'd like info about my custom songs or jingles for you, that special someone, or your pizza restaurant, whatever, I'll write you a song, chrisdemakes@gmail.com. And want to thank this week's guest, one of the most humble, sweetest guys I've ran into in a long time, Mr. Andrew Dost, and we'll see you next week.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.